All right. This is Geneva Gill interviewing Dulce M on May 5th, 2015 for the Undocumented Voices Oral History Project. This is a multi-state project, and the risks will vary depending on the interview location. We have worked to minimize these risks by attributing pseudonyms to all interviews collected. However, all interviews will be archived in the true original form. Be advised that any identifying information given during the interview will be available online publicly. And just do I have your verbal consent to conduct the interview?
Yes, you do.
Okay. So just first, I just want to learn a little more about, like, your family. Like, where were you born? And, like, tell me just a little more about your family.
I was born in Hermosillo, Sonora, Mexico. And what do you want to know about my family?
You said you were born in Hermosillo, so... Do you have any memories of your journey to the United States? Do you have brothers, sisters, your parents?
Yes, I have four siblings, three sisters and one brother. And I have plenty of memories from my country of origin. I lived there for 15 years, since I was born until I was 15. I went to... K-1 through... It always gets me screwed up because they have another system over there. And so I went into primaria. Would you say that in English?
Elementary school.
Elementary school. So I went to elementary school there. My dad has a business. Up to this day, he still lives there. My oldest sister still lives in Hermosillo, Sonora, Mexico. I have another sister that lives in Douglas, Arizona, and the rest of us are here in Phoenix.
All right, and then do you remember, like, your journey coming to the United States? And can you describe if you do remember that journey?
Well, I have plenty of family here in the United States. Uncles that move to California, to Arizona, and I always remember visiting them. I've been very fortunate to have a tourist visa, so we will come here every summer and visit them and go to the theme parks, come shopping. So the United States wasn't something, like, really new to me. One day... my mom came and to my aunt's wedding. It was going to happen in Vegas. So me and my mom are very close to each other, and we would always be together. And that time she told me that Vegas wasn't a place for children, so I couldn't go. And from that moment, I knew something was wrong. So later, a couple days later, I received a call from her, and she was explaining to me that she needed to stay in the United States to work and save money, and that she will come back for me. And it was a year. I needed to finish junior high, secundaria, over there in Mexico, and she told me that I needed to be a good girl, finish school, and she will come back and get me. So a year later, in 2000, I came to the United States on 4th of July. So, that was my journey.
So you finished junior high over there, and obviously you did high school here in the United States. Can you tell me about your experience here, like your high school experience?
The first couple months that I was here in the United States, I switched to three different high schools. I first went to Hemet San Jacinto, which is a small town, and I went to their high school. All the teachers spoke English, so I couldn't really communicate that much. I had friends there that spoke Spanish, and I also had my cousins that helped me get friends here in high school over there. So it was hard because I couldn't really understand much. There was only one teacher that spoke Spanish, and he was the math teacher, and he was not my teacher. so I had to study really hard. And sometimes I would turn in homework late because I didn't really know what they were asking me. So it would take me longer to figure out what the homework assignment was. I remember that when they give you the study guides for your test, I had to memorize them all because I didn't know exactly what they were asking. So I needed to memorize every single question and every single answer. So, but that helped me. I think it helped me learn English at a faster pace. And to make matters worse, they put me on an advanced English class. It was just a mistake. And by the time we figured it out, I was already moving to Arizona. So I had good grades because also I think it was easier to learn, like do the sciences, like math and chemistry and physics. It was easier for me to pick it up. Then I came to Phoenix. I went to South Mountain High School. And in there, it was very different because there was a lot more students that knew both languages, English and Spanish. So I was able to make more friends. And then I went to Carhaden High School. And most of the teachers there spoke Spanish. And most of the students there spoke Spanish.
Okay. And then can you tell me if there was anyone like during your high school experience that had like a positive influence like on your education or like made you want to continue on with your education after high school?
Yes, my teachers. I had two in particular. I think every teacher has been very good to me, but the ones that influenced me the more were my Freddie Langibardi and Dr. Alan Cameron, who had the robotics team at Carhaden High School. So that was back in 2001. And they showed a promo about the robotics competition that happens nationwide. And then they said, anybody can join. It doesn't matter if you don't know or have a special skill. We're starting a robotics team and everybody's invited. So I thought I met the requirements because I didn't know anything and I was barely learning the language. So I joined and they really helped me to make the right choices at school. Because I think that sometimes students or parents don't know the system or they don't get all the tricks of what classes to take to prepare to go to college. And I think a lot of the classes that I was taking were not preparing me to go to college. So with their guidance, I started making changes into my academic classes, taking math and going into summer school to catch up on my math. And they're the ones who told me that I was college material.
All right, and then just with that, like, when did you actually start thinking about college and how did you pick ASU over any other school?
So I knew I needed to go to college because that was my mom's top priority. I didn't know what college to go to and I didn't know what major I wanted to pick. But being on the robotics team, it really exposed me to science, technology, engineering, and math, and I was able to network with engineers, with CEOs, with scientists, and that really motivated me to say, hey, I want to be an engineer. So that's when my senior year, I decided that I wanted to be an engineer. And I was thinking that probably I had to go back to Mexico to go to college. But because of Dr. Cameron and Freddie Langibardi, they told me, hey, let's go and apply. And there was a recruiter from ASU that will go to Carhaden. And one day we just sat down and talked. And it was a very uncertain moment because I tried to enroll into ASU online through the online. When I was on the website trying to register, I couldn't really get that far. They were asking me for my name. And like the third question was, what's your social security number? And I knew that there was something like, I don't want to say wrong, but there was like something going on with my immigration. But I didn't really understand it until that day, that you needed a social to be able to be successful in life.
Okay. And then, so I'm moving on to like activism and movement. So obviously first question is like, what groups are you involved, are you like currently involved with? I know you're involved with ADAC and then the Carl Hayden robotics scene, but are there any other organizations you're involved with, or is it just those two?
That I'm highly involved in is just the Arizona DreamHack Coalition and the Falcon Robotics. And I would go and attend other events from other organizations, but I wouldn't consider myself to be actively involved.
All right, and then within these organizations, like how do you participate, and like what's your role in the organization?
Well, when I was in high school, I was doing public relations for Carl Hayden, fundraising, and right now I just go as support, go and hang out over there, talk to the students. Sometimes I volunteer to be a judge on their robotics competitions. On the Arizona DreamHack Coalition, I have different roles. I started being the treasurer, then the policy advisor. I was the president for like 2 years, and now I'm just a member, but I try to also motivate others so they can take those leadership roles, and we don't have to reinvent the wheel every time, because you need to pass down the knowledge or things that you have learned the hard way so they don't make the same, I don't want to say mistake, but the same, that we're able to progress, and that's my role.
Okay, and then how do you place yourself in the movement? Like, activist, like obviously you're an activist, but an ally, like what do you how do you place yourself in the movement? Like, what do you feel like your role is within the movement itself, the undocumented youth movement?
Well, I'm a person that has been affected by our broken immigration system, and although my immigration status is now, I was fixed, I'm actually in the process to apply for citizenship. My immigration status has never defined who I am, and my experiences as an immigrant have been always been that driving force for me to get involved and for me to continue being involved. So I place myself as somebody that has been affected by the broken immigration system, and people need to know what's going on, because I'm not the only one who has gone through this obstacles, and there's people that have gone through worst situations that I have gone through.
So then, like, with that, just what kind of events have you been involved with? Have you been involved with, like, I know there's, like, the lawsuit against Jen Brewer with the driver's license or the AZ to DC bus. Have you been involved with any of these, or, like, petitions, sit-ins? Like, what kind of events do you participate in throughout the movement?
I participate to the most exciting, to the most boring role or event that you want to consider. I think what I would, I mean, I have done civil disobedience for the movement when back in 2010 I decided to get arrested because we needed to push for the Dream Act. I have participated in a lawsuit against Governor Jen Brewer in the state. I did the depositions, and I was the plaintiff. Arizona DreamHack Coalition was the plaintiff, but because I was the president, I was representing in most of these activities. I go to protests, there's a lot of strategy that has to go through every time that you're going to do any type of action, whether it's a press release, march, anything that you want to do, a press conference, there has to be some type of strategy. And some people would think that those are the most exciting. Then the most challenging and boring will be going door to door, motivating people to go out and vote. Mm-hmm. I have done that. I have done fundraising, writing to funders and explaining why this is important and why do we need those resources to continue to do the work that we do. And yeah, I consider that I do pretty much a lot of stuff.
And then with that, like, how did you get involved with the movement? Like, did you meet someone that influenced you, or was it more like your own personal, you just really wanted to get involved? Because I know you said you've been involved since 2008. So just how did you get involved within the movement itself?
So I think the movement has always been there, right? Like, if we talked about discrimination and everything, like, we have the civil rights, the Chicano movement, and there was a point in my life where I was about to graduate. Well, not really, about to graduate. It was back in 2006 when Proposition 300 passed, and that was the first anti-immigrant law targeted to students and students like me that needed to pay. They wanted to take away their scholarships and increase their tuition almost tripled it. And I always thought that I was the only one attending ASU. All of my friends that had the same situation as me, that were undocumented, couldn't make it through college. And so the friends I knew in Coeur d'Alene didn't go to college. And then the friends that I met at college couldn't really relate to me, because when I would tell them and say, hey, I have this problem, I'm undocumented, they thought that I was making a joke. They didn't understand it, and we just never talked about it. So I never met somebody like me until Proposition 300 passed. And the funds, the scholarship, Stardust Scholarship. They created that, and then that kind of disappeared, and then they created the American Dream Fund. So when the American Dream Fund scholarship was created, they called a meeting. And on that meeting, when I went, I wasn't really expecting anything, but when I walked in this room, it's full of students. And even though that we didn't talk about it at that specific moment, the assumption is that if you were there, it's because you were undocumented. And we passed down a list. It was like a sign-up sheet if you guys want to receive more information or if you guys want to connect. So then we started talking on Blackboard. And from Blackboard, we thought our conversations were going to be read, and we wanted more privacy, and we went to Google Groups. And that's how the movement started, and specifically in Arizona for me. And that's how I got involved. I got involved because they took away my scholarships and they increased my tuition. And a lot of people decided to get involved at that moment and create a group. And at the beginning, it was not complicated at all. And I don't think, if I'm looking back, I don't think any of us really imagined what that small group of students would have created today. That is known as the Arizona DreamHack Coalition. Because that group of students was only talking about, how do you file your tax returns? How do you open a bank account? How do you get a job? How do you open your LLC so you can create a business? So it was more of support. Little by little, we started getting more involved.
Okay. And then, do you feel that the immigration reform should be focused at the local, state, or federal level?
There's a famous saying that says all politics is local. And I think change needs to happen everywhere. And definitely we need like legislation at the federal level. But if you look at how Congress is composed, they get elected at the local level. So for me, we need to change things in-house in order to make a bigger change nationwide. So I personally prioritize local battles rather than national. But we definitely need both.
And then how do you feel about the slogan, undocumented and unafraid, that was used? Like, what are your feelings toward that slogan? Because at least I experienced a lot of people during Dream Summer had very different opinions about it. So, like, what are your opinions or your feelings toward that slogan?
I think it depends on where you live, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, If you live in the most anti-immigrant states and you say undocumented and unafraid, for some individuals it can mean power. For me, it means a defining moment individually, a defining moment for the organization that I have been part of, the Arizona Dreamer Coalition, since I've been part of it since its existence. And I think that was a moment of growth for me as an individual and for the organization, because we needed to come out and say we're undocumented and unafraid. So that word means power for me, or that saying, or that slogan.
All right, and then how do you feel about the term documented? Because I've also heard both sides of that, the opinion about the term documented.
I think it's just another label. And we live in a society where we have to put labels in it and everything, and hashtags for everything. I don't necessarily have any opinion whether it's bad or good. I just, other than when I said it, a lot of people don't know what it means. And they get it confused with, they think that we're making a grammar or something. I don't think I really have much opinion about it.
Alright, and then moving on to with the labels, what does it mean to you to be American? What does it mean to be American?
What does it mean to be American? It means, for me, that you don't really give up and that you continue fighting and that your hard work will pay off. It doesn't mean, I think a lot of people labeled it as, oh, you were born in this side of the border or not. It's more than location, it's more than country of birth, and it's a trait that comes with it. Like, if you're American, you can prevail, and no matter how hard the obstacles are there, you're still gonna continue fighting.
Alright, and then how do you feel about the term dreamer? Because I've also heard both pros and cons about it, and people are like, well, I don't consider myself a dreamer. So how do you feel about the term itself?
I love it. I personally love the term dreamer, and I think it goes beyond. I think you can limit a term, but for me it goes beyond than just, oh, a dreamer is a person that was brought to this country before the age of 16 and qualifies for the Dream Act. For me, that's not what it means. I think for every individual, for every individual that exists in the world, at one point in their life, they had a dream and they still have dreams. And is that person that has been told, no, you can do this, no, you can do that. And that person at the end prevailed and said, look, well, I'm using what I have and showing you that I can do all I set my mind to. That's what it means for me.
And then that's all the questions.
Cool.